Hey everybody, it's Daniel Palfi and welcome back to Perspective of a 15-Year-Old. Today is the start of Season 2 where we're going to be talking about current world issues. Now the difference between what we're going to talk about and what the news covers is because right now all the news is about, you know, obviously the coronavirus. So I'm not going to be covering any of that stuff. Also, I'm going to be covering more of the conflicts worldwide that, you know, that are interesting, right? Something that, you know, major news outlets may not necessarily cover. You know, during this season, we're going to be talking about the South China Sea, Arctic Circle, Yemen, Boko Haram, and many other very interesting things that you might not actually hear a lot about. So, here in episode 1 today, we're going to be talking about the Arctic Circle and actually different countries and their influence over this region in the world. So the reason that this issue is very interesting is because of the different perspectives and views that each country has on this issue. So to fully understand what is actually happening and why it is happening, we have to understand the different sides involved. And the different sides are basically Russia against the rest of the world. Russia believes that the Arctic, since it is not claimed by a country officially, is technically free for anyone to take. So naturally, they decided to try and go and take over the Arctic and exploit it for its resources, as well as militarize it. And actually, this entire issue started in around 2001, when Russia filed the first claim to try and extend its continental shelf borders into the Arctic. The UN rejected the claim, and Russia decided to revise its claim, but the UN continually denied it, simply because they didn't want Russia taking over the entire Arctic. Now, why? Because the Arctic has a massive abundance of resources. There's actually studies that the Arctic holds 22% of the world's undiscovered energy, 90 billion barrels of oil, and 30% of the world's undiscovered gas. And these resources could satisfy the entire world's energy demands for almost 2 years. And this is why the rest of the countries don't want Russia solely taking control of the Arctic. However, after its second claim was denied, Russia decided, hey, you know what? We don't really care. And they built 6 military bases and were planning to send troops in by the year 2018. And actually, since then, some groundbreaking research that the Russians did discovered that the Arctic Ocean floors extend from their own coastline, making it actually legal for them to take over the entire Arctic. Now, in order to understand why it's legal, we have to understand the United Nations Convention of the Law of the Sea, which was passed in 1982. Basically, this was, you know, sort of like a treaty passed by the UN that a country can only claim oceanic territory 200 miles off of its coast, which includes the continental shelf. However, another clause within the Convention of the Law of the Sea says that if there is valid research provided by a country, they can file a claim to extend these continental borders. And this area within the borders is called an EEZ, an exclusive economic zone, which basically gives them all the rights to exploit any resources within that certain area within their new borders. And as I just mentioned, the Russians had the groundbreaking research that technically made it legal for them to, you know, sort of militarize the whole Arctic. So they compiled all this research, developed and submitted a claim to the UN that included their continental shelf borders expanding from 200 miles outside of expanding their original 200-mile EEZ zone to a total of about 1.2 million square kilometers. And this claim is still being reviewed by the UN today. Now, there are many reasons for this. Obviously, the United Nations didn't comment on it, neither has Russia. But being knowledgeable, I think most people would assume that the reason it is taking so long for the United Nations to look at it is because of the simple fact that it is, whether, you know, the UN likes it or not, it is legal, technically, because, you know, it follows the clause that is in the Convention of the Law of the Sea. So, technically, it is legal that they can submit a claim, but, you know, obviously, the rest of the countries don't want Russia taking over that much of the Arctic. Okay, so for now, we're going to move on from Russia, and we're going to talk about some other aspects of the issue. Now, according to the Convention of the Law of the Sea, there are four other countries that have a legal right to utilize the Arctic's natural resources: the US, Canada, Denmark, and Norway. These countries do border the Arctic Circle and have a continental shelf that extends into the Arctic. Now, I know what you might be thinking. Obviously, with Canada, it's obvious, and with Norway as well. The United States has Alaska bordering the Arctic Ocean, and Denmark actually did a study and did various research techniques that actually proved that their continental shelf did extend into the Arctic, and therefore they also gained a 200-mile exclusive economic zone, just like these nations. Now, there is a third aspect, the indigenous people. Now, one very important thing to consider here is when talking about the Arctic and people militarizing the Arctic, we're not necessarily talking about the North Pole. We're not necessarily talking about the Arctic Circle. We're talking about the Arctic region, you know? And there are indigenous people there, such as the Inuits. I don't know if I'm saying that right. But they actually are frustrated and have expressed their frustration that, you know, they reserved that land and they have been able to keep it unscathed. And that, you know, these big powerhouse countries are all of a sudden coming in here and basically, you know, not caring about their rights and just taking over. However, this escalated and turned into a bigger issue, and as a result, the Arctic Council was created. It's a council made up of 8 nations that try and protect the rights of the indigenous people of the Arctic and effectively negotiate different aspects of the region. So, now back to Russia. Russia is really the only country that has an active presence in the Arctic, and this is really why the Arctic Council was, you know, created, because it just, Russia's presence in the Arctic pushes other countries, you know? With Russia being in the Arctic, it's kind of like, hey, you know, if you're not going to necessarily fight back against me, then why should I stop? So the Arctic Council was created to sort of give a counter push to Russia's really free will actions in the Arctic. And really what Russia's goal here was establishing a political movement. You know, they were prioritizing their country over others, which you can't blame someone for doing. Many people and countries do see the Arctic as one of the most major places of energy for within the near future of this world. And Russia was simply trying to beat other countries to it. But the only thing in the Arctic aren't resources. As I told you, you know, there's oil, there's natural gas, and all that. However, with climate change and global warming becoming a really big factor in today's world, ice is consistently melting, and it is melting at a rate like we've never seen before. This is creating many new trade routes that had previously not been there, right? Russia is sending in many icebreakers, many large ships that are, you know, sort of moving this weakened and melting ice to create trade passages. one of the most important trade passages that Russia wants is them to be able to basically reach the rest of Europe by going through the Arctic and without having to go around the rest of the world. So now I'm going to sort of dive in a little bit deeper, into the Arctic Council. So the Arctic Council, as I mentioned previously, has 8 countries: the US, Russia, Sweden, Finland, Denmark, Norway, Canada, and Iceland, and actually has 13 observer states. Now, all 8 members that solve the, you know, that actually have voting rights and all that in the Arctic Council are all bordered around the Arctic. However, all of the 13 observer states obviously don't have access to the Arctic. And these countries include China, Germany, and France. And what many of these countries are actually pushing for is a passageway into the Arctic. And when the observer states joined the Arctic Council, this really gave light to a whole new aspect of the issue. Because now, landlocked nations and nations that weren't bordered around the Arctic wanted resources, and they wanted their own exclusive economic zones. Technically, under the Convention of the Law of the Sea, this was not legal. And really, this gave light. So now, the international community was trying to deal with Russia militarizing indigenous people, environmental issues in the Arctic, and now a whole new aspect came in because a bunch of landlocked nations wanted passageway to the Arctic. This issue still hasn't been solved today. The Arctic Council continues to ignore the claims and the reasons for these countries wanting a passageway into the Arctic. And honestly, I think that it is the right move, because many of the countries wanting passageway into the Arctic are already some of the more powerful nations. The more powerful landlocked nations, or countries that don't have a current border on the Arctic. So, now I'm going to kind of go over what could happen, and, you know, what some solutions might be. But it's important to remember that, any treaty would be very hard to draft because of Russia's really aggressive stance on the topic. So, one solution that has been proposed by many other countries is to create an Arctic treaty, sort of like they have the Antarctic Treaty, and model it after that. And the treaty would basically find common views and between perspectives of all the Arctic nations. But like I just said, it'd be very, very hard to draft because of Russia's extremely aggressive stance on the topic. You know, they were there first. Why can't we have the whole thing? There are many other solutions that you have to go into, such as the actual power of the Arctic Council. You know, possibly making Arctic waters international with incentives, using innocent passage, which I'll explain in a second, you know, trade route checkpoints, the power of the UN, their actual presence in the Arctic, and, you know, collaboration in environmental protection as well as joint research. And I'm going to try and go into detail on really each of these things that I think could extremely help in sort of de-escalating the issue. Okay, so first I'm going to discuss making Arctic waters international with incentives. So, this is a solution that has consistently been brought up by mainly the United States and Canada. What they want is to make the Arctic waters international, right? So, no more exclusive economic zones, none of that. However, in order to enter the Arctic zone or use it as trade, or use it to exploit resources, you would have to pay incentives to the Arctic Council. Now, this is obviously a kind of a flawed plan, right? Because opening up the entire Arctic to the international community would defeat the entire purpose of having the Arctic Council. And second of all, obviously Russia immediately rejected this because they believe that the entire Arctic belongs to them. However, other countries in the Arctic Council rejected this as well because they claimed that it was simply a power, sort of like a power strategy for the US and Canada, because Canada has the second most, you know, border on the Arctic, and accompanied with the US, they would have the biggest. So they think that a lot of other countries thought that this was simply a power plan for the US and Canada, and it didn't pass. However, they're still trying to convince other countries to consider it. The second one is Innocent Passage. Now, this one is a bit complex. Now, we talked about the exclusive economic zones that each country has. And what Russia has proposed and what most countries agree on is that the Innocent Passage through their exclusive economic zones. Meaning that when another country wants to pass through their economic zones, they cannot take any resources. They may not take any resources, you know, they can't steal anything or use anything. They can simply go through the zone, and it will require taxation. Russia obviously has sort of supported this, but the rest of the international community clearly doesn't, because one would simply be paying to use a trade route while the Arctic Council is getting paid to let other countries in. Another solution that has been brought up is trade route checkpoints. Basically having checkpoints on the newly created trade routes with the ice melting, where countries can or ships that pass through can be inspected and to check if they have stolen anything or... Now, there's really only one more thing, and that is the environmental protection and joint research. And what many countries have agreed on and what they have done in the past is creating joint research teams within the Arctic, as well as collaborating on environmental protection.